Oh, yeah, we've got that college admissions bribery scandal. People are shaking their fingers, wagging them, virtue signaling. How dare you, students? How dare you, parents? And then there's sad news in Toronto from the Toronto Sun. Billionaire diamond trader Ehud Ari Laniad has passed away. His, quote, pursuit of a plentiful penis has ended in his death, stated the Toronto Sun. The billionaire, diamond trader, 65-year-old Big Wheel, unquote, died of a heart attack at a private Paris hospital where he was undergoing a penis enlargement procedure. Okay, great. That's good. Could we just get to what's really important, though? There's a $6 billion project happening in Chicago between Bucktown and Lincoln Park. 14.5 acres. Massive towers, 600 foot tall, office space, retail, residential units, $6 billion altogether, with more than $1 billion on top of that in public taxes going to pay for the infrastructure. As that part of the city becomes a little Manhattan, the other parts of the city are forgotten, including how it began. Do you remember? No? I do. And some of you do too. People who remember in this town are dangerous. Jeff Carlin, WGN's Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis, is here. He's back in the studio trying to put all this sound together. And I'm in the undisclosed location, hoping you don't find me before I finish this podcast. I'm John Cass, husband, father, two great boys. Owner, or I guess master or friend of Zeus, tomato gardener, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And you're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
You remember how Lincoln Yards began? Let me tell you a story. It used to be called Finkelsteel, and Mayor Richard M. Daley, loved burning guns at Finkelsteel. It was a plant, the steelmaking plant, right there in the city, just west of DePaul. Every so often, every year or so, the police would round up all the guns that they confiscated, and I always thought that some of the better guns, like the Italian shotguns and so forth, ended up elsewhere. Someday I'll find out the real story of where the fine firearms went. But your average Saturday night specials that weren't needed for evidence, they burned them in a dramatic display in the hearth of open steel, of steel making. They would throw the guns in there. Of course, the bullets, the rounds had been taken out so they wouldn't explode in the mayor's face or in the face of the reporters covering it. And then they would burn them and melt them into a pile. Oh, it was just perfect. And around that time, you know what happened? Daley and City Hall decided, well, you know, Finkelsteel is a good corporate citizen. They burn the guns and so forth. They let Mayor Daley stand there to burn the guns. So why don't we let them put their pieces of property that are all, you know, they're not contiguous. Let's make one contiguous, massive property for them because they're so nice. So the mayor and the city council allowed them to purchase streets. For a dollar, sometimes not, just put it all together in one piece, right? So it was one massive piece, not chunks. It was a perfect spot. It was a perfect spot for steel. And then later, it was a perfect spot for DePaul Stadium. Yeah, it's right west of DePaul, just a walk to DePaul. Kids could have gone there, they could have walked out. Walked to the DePaul Stadium, right there on the Finkelsteel property. But you know what Rahm did? Rahm Emanuel? He went and spent, what, $100 million to build Wintrust Arena in McCormick Place. that college kids don't want to go to. They don't have a constituency. I mean, you're in college, you want to walk to the place, you don't want to get in the car, your car, and drive 10 miles to go to see a basketball game. It really hurt DePaul. There's no constituency for it. So why did they build it? This is why. Why did Rahm talk about the need for the Wintrust Arena? Why did they have to clear the land on Finkelsteel land? Why? Because Lincoln Yards, that's why. You see how the Chicago way works? There was planning in all this. We're talking billions of dollars. This isn't a game. The ward was remapped, as they all are. This in 2000. Ward was created. Daily Family retainer Brian Hopkins was remapped in. He was installed as alderman in 2015. Scott Wagspach, the 32nd ward, was kept out of it. Funny how that works. Like a coincidence. Wagspach, anybody who would maybe make a problem for Lincoln Yards in the community was kind of pushed out. But a ward was made. A nice ward for Brian Hopkins. Hopkins calls himself Johnny Daly's former chief of staff, but let's get real. He was last with Susana Mendoza. He was supporting her campaign for mayor. I think Burke was too, wasn't he? Or maybe, I don't know, was he supporting Tony Preckwinkle? Or I don't know, was Madigan behind Mendoza? I don't know. It's all confusing sometimes. What's not confusing is when this is over, Brian Hopkins, alderman of the 2nd Ward, Sterling Bay will give you warm regards. Burke and Madigan do the remapping. Or they did. Oddly enough, Madigan makes a fortune reducing property taxes for businesses. And guess what? So does Burke. And Burke had the property tax reduction business for Sterling Bay at Lincoln Yards until, guess what? Danny Solis wore a wire and then, you know, it all went south for Eddie Burke. But he was still there at the city council meeting whispering to finance chairman Pat O'Connor. What is Sterling Bay anyway? What does it mean, Sterling Bay? Sounds like a couple kids from New Trier or maybe Hinsdale or Lyons Township drinking scotch in Dad's garage, coming up with the idea for a faux British shaving company, you know, straight razors and strops and lavender shaving cream. And Sterling Bay, what? Jeeves, Sterling Bay? My shave comes with Sterling Bay. But really what it comes with is TIFFs. $1 billion, $1.3 billion. And Scott Wagspach saying, and rightly, that the city needs money for other priorities right now.
When you look at the funding that we're going to have to find in the next couple years for pension payments, we're not going to be able to make that by basically putting more money aside into TIFFs in areas that don't need it.
And then Michelle Smith, of course, had something to say at City Hall the other day as the alderman approved the zoning part. The zoning, just the zoning for Sterling Bay.
We welcome development. I, like Alderman Garza, support the trades. We want it. But it doesn't have to be through a handout.
And then when they get to the TIF project, you know, the tax increment financing part, that's where $1 billion goes. It'll be the largest TIF in the history of the city. Might come after the mayoral election. Finally, there'll be other votes after it, when aldermen on the way out are still lame ducks, and even Rahm is a lame duck. But even lame ducks can take care of their friends, can't they? That's the Chicago way. The neighborhoods are ignored. Big business takes care of itself. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is taking care of Sterling Bay, and I wouldn't be surprised if what Sterling Bay really means is, we got you elected. You better take care of this. I don't even know who they are. Wouldn't it be nice if Sterling Bay showed up? I mean, at a, you know, Mr. Sterling Bay with handlebar mustaches and a rep tie, maybe a Savile Row suit. And he stood up and sat down right there next to Ed Burke in an eclipse British accent, sort of like C. Aubrey Pembroke or something. Gave us an understanding of what Sterling Bay is. I'll tell you what it is. It's the Chicago way.
Wheel in the sky keeps on turning. Oh, I don't know what I'll be tomorrow.
Well, I'm sorry to say that there's no news to report, no further updates to report on billionaire diamond trader Ehud Ari Laniad and his, quote, pursuit of a beautiful penis, unquote, according to the Toronto Sun. His company, Omega Diamonds, he's a diamond trader, confirmed his death, but no one has given any more news, and really, I don't want any more news. I don't care about his pursuit of whatever. I'm just amazed that the Toronto Sun, one of the Thompson Dailies years ago, has descended to clickbait like this. Of course, I mentioned it because I'm not above it either. There are varied forms of clickbait, and one form of it is this new college admissions bribery scandal. Why is it a big story? People with clout clouted their kids into colleges. And you've got TV stars like Lori Loughlin, and she and her husband apparently spent $500,000 to engineer them into school at USC, squeeze them in, cheat their way in. If Reggie Bush, the former running back from USC, the weasel who was, you know, basically shouldn't have been in school because shouldn't have been on the team at USC because his, I think it was his parents got a job from some agent and were paid off, something like that, right? Anyway, sorry if I'm getting this wrong, Reggie, but if Reggie Bush were tweeting about this, he'd say, look, you rich white people have it all wrong. You don't pay to cheat and get into school. The school pays you to cheat, so you go to school. USC, Yale, they're all blown up. And you know, what's amazing to me is that, or not amazing, I guess, in this clickbait world of ours, I've seen people writing this story three or four times in a 24-hour period. It's clicktastic, right? And you can shake your finger and tell parents and kids what's on your mind and what you want and what should be done. I'm thinking, you don't have kids in college, do you? I mean, people who talk like that, they don't have kids in college. If they get upset, if they're screaming and yelling and lecturing about what should be done and what they forget what it's like. Here's what it's like. Young people are committing suicide. High numbers. They're doing that for a reason. They think they're lost. They don't have the ability to prosper and succeed. Of course, they're crazy. I mean, not crazy. I don't mean to disparage mental illness, but what I mean is they don't see the reality of things. I mean, any impoverished immigrant from some terrible place die to get here, to just have a chance to be a failure like they would be. I mean, our failures are other people's successes. And those kids, they commit suicide. Our kids. And we have to watch them. And it's an indictment, really, on liberal education, liberal arts education. I don't mean it like in the old cast as a conservative, liberals. But think of it this way. You can clout your way into USC or Yale. You can study economics or, I guess, what do they call that, marketing and partying. Colleges of liberal arts, you can do all that. And if you get into Yale or Harvard, one of the top Ivy League schools, and become a master of the universe, once you get there, your work really is, I mean, I'm told your work is ended. I mean, you've been imprinted. You have the seal of approval on your forehead. And you will always be a leader because this is an aristocracy that we live in, not a meritocracy. And you could be a moron and get into Yale and be a leader or Harvard. The people that are the true successes in business usually go to state schools. Most of them are hungry kids. Hungry kids that want to work and make a success of themselves, and they make money, and then they make a lot of money and then wonder what they want to spend it on. and they think their life is a failure. And they sit in their big house and have a brandy, stare into the fireplace longingly for better days. You can do all this. You can play games if it's a liberal arts college. If you get into Cal Poly, if you cheated your way into Cal Poly or IIT or MIT, guess what? You'd fail. If you couldn't meet the basic standards, you would fail. You'd be drummed out of the school. If you can't do math, and I'm talking advanced math, you can't stay at IIT or at MIT, certainly. They'll kick you right out. The numbers are the numbers. But if you're studying if you're studying economics or women's studies or some intersectional bullshit that has nothing to do with facts, but has everything to do with opinion and the politics of the professor in the school, well, then you're gold. But those kids, people are lecturing and writing and lecturing. I don't know. You ever have kids who are that age? It's not easy. It's not easy for them. Everybody's so sure of themselves. Everybody's so sure. And they virtue signal in the papers and in columns and in punditry on television because they want and radio because they're trying to impress them. I guess what? Keep themselves on the straight and narrow and say it loudly enough so that they won't stray. But let me tell you something. People will do anything for their kids. Anything.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh.
Oh, great, everybody. Beto O'Rourke is announcing that he's running for president. The last time I even thought about him, he had his mouth wide open at the dentist's. And he was inviting the country to, I guess, enter his mouth and watch him get his teeth cleaned or something. Saliva and flecks of corn all over the place. And now he's really scaring me by running. I don't know what's next. He's 46 years old. He's got to visit the proctologist soon. Is he going to invite us to do that too? Put that on Twitter, live feed on Facebook, whatever. Come on, Beto. Please don't do that. Please. I mean it, really. Just please. Well, let's see. We have our own election in Chicago. Lori Lightfoot is running for mayor against Tony Preckwinkle. And, you know, it amazed me. They appeared at the Chicago Tribune editorial board this week, and I caught up with them afterward. I was there for the editorial board. I'm on the editorial board. Some people on social media are saying Cass is not on the board, but you know what? I am. I caught up with them afterward, walked outside, and I wanted to ask him questions that weren't asked in there, things I could put on the sound, on the air. And I wanted to ask them specifically about things I've mentioned in my Tribune column and on this podcast. That dog whistle business, you know, that we talked about with Tony Preckwinkle. Did she send out a dog whistle, as some gay and lesbian activists are saying, about Lori Lightfoot's sexuality? And also about Lori Lightfoot and this whole idea as to whether or not she's the inevitable candidate. First, let's hear from Tony. She's a liberal progressive Democrat all her life.
Being a liberal progressive Democrat, I'd say, for most of your life.
All my life, thank you very much.
Okay, and but now with that last exchange at the last debate, What do you think about Lori's, you know, coming out and being gay and all that? You seem to be under assault, at least by, you're accused of making dog whistles politically.
No, of course not.
What do you think of
no,
that
of course
criticism?
Not. Of course not.
I'm not saying you did. I'm saying you're being accused of it.
Yeah, of course not. And there was no bad intention there. I honestly respect, you know, her forthrightness about this. You know, this is a country that still struggles with homophobia and discrimination against the LGBTQ community. You know, and I've been a strong straight supporter of the LGBTQ community my whole life. You know, I've supported candidates for water reclamation district, for state representative, for aldermen, who were members of the LGBTQ community and members of my leadership team in my campaign, and my leadership team as president of the county are members of that community as well.
So any criticism is unwarranted, then?
That's my conviction.
You know, the thing about Toni Preckwinkle, she paid her dues. She climbed up the machine from the outside. Toni Preckwinkle did. From the outside, where it was cold and windy. She didn't climb up on the inside with carpeted stairs, but she climbed up at least in the first few floors on the scaffold outside. Then she made deals for power. Then she became a boss. You know, she backed Joe Berrios, the Cook County assessor, who was found by the Tribune and Publica to have been overcharging or over-assessing poor minority and black and Latino families in their houses. And that's the Democratic chairman's, Preckwinkle, support of Berrios. And then later, of course, she did that thing with Burke. Went to Burke's house, had the fundraiser, got Burke's kid a job. How was she to know that Danny Solis, alderman of the 25th Ward, had wired up and it would all come out in a big story? And Burke would have his offices wrapped up in brown butcher paper. Remember that? So there's this feeling now out there among some that that Lightfoot is representing a different politic, still on the left, but, you know, clearly not on the Burke side of things, that Lightfoot is somehow inevitable. And Toni Preckwinkle is the Hillary Clinton of Chicago now, right? She did all the right things. She checked all the boxes. She made all the deals. She compromised herself on the way up. And there comes Barack Obama, a man, a clean slate, someone that David Axelrod likes, you know, someone without a past. And here's Lori, and really, we don't really know much about her other than her public life, which is about a campaigner. We don't know much about Lori, and that'll be filled in by the newspapers, of course. That's why it's a good thing to have newspapers in a town like this, and it'll also be filled in by Preckwinkle's opposition research. But anyway, I caught up with Lori and asked her about this whole inevitability thing. Are you worried about being thought of as the inevitable candidate?
Worried at all about becoming first the candidate that people weren't really paying much attention to now the candidate that is being seen as inevitable. Are you kind of are you worried about
that? We're not inevitable. We're an underdog. We're going against an opponent who's been a politician for decades, who has climbed the ladder of the broken machine, who has resources that are going to far outpace ours. So we take nothing for granted. We're not taking our foot off the gas pedal. We're running as an underdog, and hopefully we'll be victorious and bring our message of change to neighborhoods all over the city. Thanks,
everybody. Okay, everybody, listen. Billionaire diamond trader Ehud Ari Laniad is still dead. You know what he died of. Poor guy got a heart attack at a private hospital in Paris, undergoing a penis enlargement procedure. But I should probably tell you that legend has it that years and years ago, taxpayers of Chicago, Cook County, were billed, I think it was $65,000 apiece in those days, back in the 70s, maybe $80,000. It's a Chicago way legend, but I think it's correct. That two leading Chicago Democrats, old men who like to watch young girls, you know, cut grass or whatever, do chores around the house and so forth. young women, I mean, not girls, but age of consent at least. So they, each of them had the Cook County taxpayers pay for a procedure of male sexual enhancement. I think it was $65,000 or $85,000, one of the two. Because that's the Chicago way too, unfortunately. And so at least we mocked billionaire diamond trader Ehud Laniad, but you know what? He used his own money and he died. For Beto O'Rourke, running for president, you are so beautiful, man. For Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle, running for mayor of Chicago. For the good people of the 32nd and 43rd wards on the north side between Bucktown and on the Chicago River, who are having their neighborhoods assaulted by the Chicago Way. And at least 12,000 or more residents coming in an already crowded neighborhood, and tax deals and all that oily, greasy stuff of the Chicago Way from Sterling Bay. And for Jeff Carlin, who's back at the studio, WGN, trying to make all good sense of this. And I guess for me, John Cass, husband, father, tomato gardener. I just got a Facebook message from my friend Vito Martino. It was a picture of beautiful homegrown tomatoes. Don't you wish for a grown homegrown tomato? Yeah, Vito. It's March. I'm starting to think about it too, man. This has been another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+. Thank you for joining us, and please join us again next time, won't you?